From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our super producer. Most importantly, you're here. You are you. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Did you guys happen to grab lunch today?
Yes.
I grabbed it double-fisted.
Well, not to pry, but what did you have for lunch today?
Some delicious sausage.
Just that?
Just sausage.
Just like a pile of sausage?
Yes. I threw it on a fire, and then I just grabbed it with my bare hands off the fire and just ate upon it.
You must have some real calloused hands.
Yes.
Classic Matt.
Yeah. They're asbestos.
What about you, Noel?
I had some lemon pepper chicken breast that I prepared this morning, mixed with a nice root vegetable medley that I had left over from a few nights prior. It was delightful.
BlueApron.com.
No,
promo
no.
code.
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-mm. I made them myself.
Whoa. With your skills, taught to you by Blue Apron.
And the Gordon Ramsay Masterclass.
And as Checkers says in their – as Checkers is a fast food chain here for people outside of the United States. As Checkers is wont to say, you got to eat. Is that Checkers?
Mm-hmm. But then they follow it up with, you got to eat Checkers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's an implication there, not to be too Dennis Reynolds about it. But it remains true. And food is one of the great uniting factors of our species. We can't agree on much, but we can agree that we should all probably eat something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And nowadays, it seems like a few times a year, we'll hear about a food scandal. It's so – not that it's common, but it's frequent enough not to be astounding every time it happens. There's like horse meat in some pies in the UK or something, you know?
Yeah, or the spinach has been contaminated with this or the other in its preparation process.
And in as much as it is a thing across our entire species, just the very word taste implies such a specificity of preference to food. And we use that word to talk about any kind of preference for all things. So, you know, yes, food – very universal, but also very particular.
Yes, yeah. And there are also cases of recalled yogurt, both in both senses of the word cases.
I recall the yogurt I had. No, the different kind of – you're talking about spoiled, contaminated yogurt that gets forcibly removed from the market.
Right, right. Yes, yes, of course. And we'll also inevitably hear pop science studies that come out, right, that have a very alarmist, almost WebMD tone to them. You know, recent studies show that coffee is tremendously good. Oh, no, wait, bad for you. Oh, no, wait, it's good again. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like butter is another thing we hear about.
Or sugar, and they kind of intertwine, and one of them is giving you cancer and the other one is saving your life.
Mm-hmm. And when you add up all these complaints and these studies, these contradictory opinions and perspectives, it becomes alarmingly and surprisingly easy to think that the world is going to hell in a handbasket, or should I say a breadbasket.
What is a breadbasket? Is it like a cornucopia?
I've seen – you know, I was thinking the same thing with a bread box. They're literally just to hold bread.
Mm. It's sort of an outdated thing too. I don't think people keep their bread in boxes typically anymore. More in plastic in the cabinet.
My parents totally have a wooden bread box.
But they don't keep bread in it, do they?
Yes, they do.
They do.
Yep, and all kinds of – I was going to say Egg McMuffins, but that's not a thing.
You've clearly gone mad.
I know.
You know, it's true. Isn't it true that bread will tend to go stale more quickly in a refrigerator? That's something I had heard. Also, I would love it if people kept bread the way that Bond supervillains keep a cat, like it was just on their armchair and they would pet it while they talked to you.
Like a nice baguette that you have just like tucked under your arm and you pet it like a, mm-hmm. like a creature. Life hack, if you buy a baguette and you eat half of it and you don't want it to go stale, put it in the freezer. And then the next day, put it directly in the oven. It is fresh and crispy as can be. Just putting that out there.
Life has been hacked.
Life has indeed been hacked in baguettes and more. In regardless of what we hear about, you know, the dirty yogurt industry or contaminated meat, the truth of the matter is that at least here in the United States, things in general are safer than they have been in the past. You can go into a grocery store nowadays and you can buy a can of Spam, a can of, you know, tuna. I'm thinking of things that seem weird to be in cans. And you have a pretty high likelihood of not dying immediately, which is amazing.
What about deviled ham? How do you guys feel about deviled ham?
Honestly, I don't even really know what it is.
I think it's kind of like Spam, but it's just canned ham. And it's got a little devil with a pitchfork on it. To me, that says stay away.
I love the idea of deviled being a process. And I think we talked before, I don't know if it was on air or off, about what is it to devil something, to bedevil it.
In my mind, when you devil something, you take out a portion of it, you you mix it up, you like grind it all up, and then you put it back onto a part that has not been ground up, like if you devil an egg.
Sure, there we go.
So maybe the ham is portion of it has been ground up to pieces and then put back with the rest of the ham and
spat
as like
back out.
Yeah,
baby bird style.
I feel like we're onto something, and the good news is that regardless of the way something is prepared, here at least in the United States and in many other countries, there is some sort of organization that supervises and regulates the quality of these food products. This was not always the case. In fact, the reason we have the FDA today is thanks in large part to a imperfect fellow named Harvey Wiley.
It's true. And Ben, you and I actually did an episode about Mr. Wiley, Dr. Wiley, dare I say. I think he was an MD, so we'll call him Dr. Wiley.
Professor.
Yeah, for our other show, Ridiculous History. And we talked about his poison squad, which was a thing that he assembled, a study made up of some very iron-gutted fellows who volunteered to be poisoned on purpose.
Effectively, yes. And Matt, you were talking with us about this off air, right?
Yeah, there's a quotation about there were 12 younger guys who would go to this kitchen where foods would be prepared for them with increasing doses of food additives, stuff that later on we would know you do not want to put in your foods. Mm-hmm. But at the time, something like borax was added to foods just because it was a food additive.
To increase the yield or something.
Yes, right? Exactly. Yeah. A lot of times they were for preservation, to keep the foods fresh longer. But, you know, this gentleman, Harvey Wiley, realized that perhaps some of these are very, very dangerous. And they illustrated it perfectly by giving these increased doses until the subjects would just get awfully sick. And they'd realize that that's the threshold.
Oh, there we are. Yeah. After the fact, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's how much borax is too much borax. Well, Harvey Wiley, as you can learn in depth in our episode on Ridiculous History, Harvey Wiley was a man on a mission. And ultimately, his work led to a passage of law in 1906 that eventually led to the FDA. Today, they're tasked with determining safety standards for food manufactured in, grown in, or imported to the U.S. overall, as well as some exportation since it would be grown or created here. We live in a divisive political age, but one thing that's beautiful about this idea, if not this organization, is that everyone can agree it's a good thing to try to keep fingers and meatpacking factories attached to the hands they came in with instead of in, you know, your next can of deviled ham.
Yeah. And that's not to say that there aren't conspiracy theories about the FDA and what they may or may not be doing and programs and that we've covered before on the show. And if you're interested, you can look up some of our stuff on GMOs and there's several other topics.
Brominated vegetable oil.
Yeah. And whether or not the conspiracy theories surround whether or not the FDA is purposefully trying to get some of these things into our diet. But, you know, that's for another day.
And we're going to look at both sides of that in a little bit. But before we do, why don't we kind of give a little rundown of some of the facts?
Absolutely. So let's look at the scale of the FDA first, the Food and Drug Administration. They are a huge deal. Some estimates report that 20 cents out of every single dollar Americans spend goes toward a product that has been supervised or regulated by the FDA. We're talking $1 trillion in goods.
Wow.
I go to the grocery store like 5 times a week. I like to do little shops. Mm-hmm. So I definitely am part of this trend.
And here's the hilarious thing about an entity with so much power that has such an ubiquitous effect, right, on consumers and on organizations. As Matt said, the FDA is often roundly criticized, but it's criticized in such a strange way. It's often accused of both overregulation and, at the same time, underregulation, doing way too much and doing not near enough. Constantly. It's constantly accused of these things.
Well, yeah, and you imagine that it's one administration, one, I mean, very large group of human beings that are working at it, but they're covering, like you said, a whole host of different products from drugs to food. That's a lot of things.
Man, I mean, $1 trillion in goods, that's a lot of goods. I mean, each one of those, you know, some might be less than a dollar, like a particular piece of produce, but, you know, a lot of packaged stuff is like $5 or $6. We're talking about millions and millions and millions of individual items of food that this one organization is responsible for ensuring that we are not getting poisoned by.
Yeah, and I love that you point that out too, because we are counting things that are less than a dollar. Everything from a single grape, mm-hmm. if you buy a single grape, if you're at that point.
A kiwi?
A kiwi, that's probably a better example, to the, you know, to some very high-end seafood or something.
Sure.
Let's look at the idea of overregulation. When people talk about the FDA overregulating stuff, they're talking usually about what they see as some sort of unfair censorship.
In terms of the language used in advertising a product?
Exactly. So take dietary supplements. We've all seen the infomercials, you know, my life was a dumpster fire until I started taking fish oil 8 times a day. Or, you know, I'm making that example up. Those products fall smack dab in the middle of the Venn diagram between food and drugs.
Almost a drug, almost a food, but not quite either.
Which is the slogan for Matt's new herbal supplement company, right?
Yeah. It's not quite food or a drug.
Matty Caps.
Matty Caps. I like that. The fine makers of Matt Mints.
Yeah. So the advocates of the supplement industry, people hoisting all kinds of vitamins at you, they'll argue that the FDA prevents manufacturers from making claims about the effectiveness of a product, even when research, they say, proves the benefits are genuine. But you're talking about such a range here of things that a supplement can supposedly do, because you can still find things occasionally that will claim to cure cancer. And it will be a supplement of an extract of a certain fruit or a berry or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you still can have things like that, my opinion is that you need to have something regulating it. Say, you know, you can't say that this will let you be able to fly.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a bad idea.
Right. Well, there's also, I mean, how is saying something would cure cancer any different?
Correct.
People on the other side would argue. Yeah, that's a great point, because we have to ask why this comes about. It's because, as far as the FDA is concerned, legally, dietary supplements, whether they are purported cancer cures, it's vitamin B12, fish oil, whatever you want, regardless, they're considered foods, which means their makers can only create limited claims about the structure or function. And specifically, to Matt's point, they cannot claim that any supplement can prevent, cure, or mitigate a disease or condition, regardless of what kind of scientific literature they find or pay for regarding those abilities.
And I mean, through our various shows that we do here at How Stuff Works, we've encountered advertisers that have very specific language in the copy that they give you, where it says you cannot say this, you have to say this, this is the part you have to read. And we know that from things like medications on television that have those litany of side effects and things that are clearly regulated by law that they have to rattle that off, or else who would do it, right? Because it just totally derails the experience of watching that, you know, delightful scene of a young child and her mother frolicking through a field of green grass and being pushed on a swing set or something.
What's that old trope in stock images and stock footage? A lady eating a salad alone and laughing. Now you will not be able to unsee that. But it's also, I'm really glad we brought this up, because believe it or not, residents of the United States, those strange, very vague, as Noel said, pharmaceutical ads that we see on television are illegal in most other developed countries.
Yeah. Even having billboards for any kind of drug is illegal in a lot of places, but advertising of any kind.
And that lends credence to the idea that the pharmaceutical industry in the United States has a massive amount of control. This is something that even members of Congress take issue with. So a critic who would say that the FDA is censoring dietary supplement manufacturers would be someone like Ron Paul. He says that this stuff comes about because the FDA is in bed with the pharmaceutical companies. They don't want you to know that, you know, St. John's wort can cure your brain fever. I'm just going to make up a disease, your gutter hand. On November 10th, 2005, Ron Paul introduced something called the Health Freedom Protection Act, H.R. 4282, which he argues would prevent the FDA from censoring truthful claims about the curative, mitigative, or preventative effects of dietary supplements. He said this would also adopt the federal court's suggested use of disclaimers as an alternative to straight-up censorship. So in this case of censorship or overregulation, people who believe it also believe there's an active conspiracy afoot by Big Pharma to prevent people from knowing that their food can be their medicine, which is something you hear a lot if you're a fan of Dead Prez and other alternative hip hop. But what about the other side of the argument? What about the people who say the FDA is not doing near enough? For people who believe that the FDA underregulates food, the agency is awash in corruption, a lack of oversight, and at times, purposeful railroading of valuable medical research.
Whoa. So what kind of stuff are we talking about here?
Well, hold your horses, buddy. We'll get right into that after a quick ad break.
So the United States, despite being a massive developed country, permits multiple food additives that are generally acknowledged throughout the rest of the world as either unhealthy or dangerous in some way.
Remember earlier when we were talking about advertising of pharmaceuticals and billboards and stuff, mm-hmm. how that's illegal in a lot of other countries? Very similar case here. Why is this?
That is the crux of the question. So it might be surprising for people who have traveled to the U.S. from another country to notice the change in food. If you're a Redditor, or if you lurk on Reddit, then you'll read things that people from other countries visiting the U.S. have written about regarding what confused them or what surprised them for the good or the bad when they visited this country. And one of the top things they always mention is the food. They say it's delicious. The portions are way too big. Why is there such an abundance, a plethora, an overabundance of food? And then later, why is so much of this stuff so bad for people? Like with in specifics, we have multiple specific examples of dangerous, scary, or even terrifying things that you might have just eaten earlier this week or today. You might be eating now as you listen to this podcast and pet your baguette on your arm, on your armchair. One of the big examples that's familiar to a lot of people would be food coloring, right?
Yep.
Food coloring, you see it in candy a lot.
And sodas, and a lot of just manufactured foods.
And whereas some chemicals have their entire name printed out, a lot of food coloring just has a description of the color and a number, right? Like yellow number 5.
It's one better than yellow number 4.
Yeah, yellow number 5 is a very strange one. You guys remember the rumors of yellow number 5 in Mountain Dew, right? When you were growing up?
Ooh,
did you ever
tell.
Hear this?
No.
There was a rumor that was always at my school, at least, before the internets, that yellow 5 food coloring would reduce your sperm count.
I was going to say shrink your pee-pee.
And mess with your downstairs area in various ways. The rumors were different throughout.
Mess with your Australia, huh?
Yes. the old downstairs. But it goes back to some real things. In 1975, this guy named Ben Feingold, who was he was working at, I believe, the Kaiser Permanente Medical Center. Mm-hmm. He he mentioned that this and other food dyes may cause hyperactivity in children, or he proposed this idea at least. And there were studies that rebutted this claim. There were some studies that showed perhaps there was some truth to this claim. And it's that same situation that I think we've been in for a long time where depending on how you interpret data from something or data from something, a study like this, mm-hmm. you can make it lean one way or the other, really.
That makes sense, and that's a dangerous thing we always run into. That's why you always want to be careful when you hear nutrition advice. You want to see not only is this from a nutritionist, but what school did this nutritionist go to?
Well, not only that, like people who write studies are all about numbers and data, and when you package that up and put it in a press release, you are editorializing said data and you are giving it weight with language that it's not really how it was intended to be read. Maybe there's an abstract that gives you like a basic rundown of the findings of the study, but when you, it's like when you start taking movie reviews out of context, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it becomes a whole ball of wax.
Except in this case, it's your health rather than just if your eyes enjoyed something or not.
True, true. And this point is so incredibly important. We would add to it too that another question is, who paid for the study? Because the scientists are typically not out there working entirely for free. In the case of coloring agents, we should point out that they do play an important role, especially if there's competition in a grocery store, because most not all, but a lot of the food that we eat has an artificial color so that it adheres to our idea of what that food should look like as it was presented in a Norman Rockwell painting or in a commercial. And this explains why artificial dyes have increased, like the use of artificial dyes mm-hmm. has increased fivefold since the mid-1950s.
Well, it's like the idea of margarine being colored yellow. Margarine in its untreated form is white, but people expect it to be yellow because it's meant to be like a butter substitute. And there's a whole another story there about how margarine was maligned by the butter industry because it was seen as competition, unfair competition, because it was cheaper. But it just goes to show that it matters to us as consumers what color something is.
I still have an aversion to margarine just because of growing up hearing stories about, oh, don't eat margarine.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Well, you're from a bread box community.
Well, yeah, but my parents always only stock margarine at their house.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Your margarine house.
Yeah, margarine house, dude. My wife's Cuban family is like, what is margarine? Get that out of here.
Why are you doing this to us, Matthew?
And right? I said, I love you, and I will be with you forever because real butter is the way to go.
So we see this. We see this fight between additives, between food impersonators, right? And today, most artificial colors that you're going to find in use are actually made from coal tar. This is the same stuff that seal coats products to protect the shine of industrial floors. You can see it in head lice shampoo as well because it kills lice.
Yeah. Great thing called indigotine, I think is what they call it. That's the blue number two, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Just good stuff. Really good stuff.
And there's another specific example, which I know a lot of people are waiting for us to mention, and it's the use of antibiotics in livestock. This, regardless of whether you're a vegetarian or you're a person who just wants to eat a live cow every day for the rest of your life, which is a lot of beef, we can say that there are compelling studies indicating the dangers of using antibiotics in livestock. This is used in the pork industry as well as the beef industry. And one of the concerns there is that this could somehow lead to the creation of a superbug. I think we mentioned this later in our superbug episode because doctors have been historically over-prescribing antibiotics to human patients, and there's much less regulation in the world of non-human patients.
Dude, as you can probably tell, I have a cold right now. If I went to my doctor today with this cold, they would give me a Z-Pak and send me out the door. They do every time. I have a medicine cabinet full of these because I never take them because they never actually fix the problem. And that is like a systemic cultural thing. It's weird.
Well, then when you talk about factory farming and just the closeness of all the animals and everything, you're giving antibiotics many times to animals as a preventative so they don't get sick, which is a whole other just issue.
And now in the European Union, the use of antibiotics has been drastically phased down or out, you know, country by country. I think Sweden banned it back in 1986. You can still see it in use in some other countries after that, but they were making phase out plans, you know, to take it down to like 60% of our current antibiotic use. And yeah, the preventative thing mainly concerns people because it could essentially be like a tough love camp for bacteria.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
In sharp, stark contrast, 80% of antibiotics sold in the United States are used on livestock, not on people.
Wow, that's incredible, especially since it's becoming more and more popular to buy non-antibiotic meat, or at least it's growing a little bit. I'm not saying it's ubiquitous.
Not growing as fast as those cows on the hormones, though, are they?
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. We have so many human beings in this country and throughout the world that you've got to provide food for them. So how do you do that? You have to make sure you have enough healthy, you know, in this case, cattle or chickens or pigs or whatever, and you have to make sure they're growing as fast as possible.
There's a really interesting film on Netflix called Okja. It's about the breeding of these super pigs and how that enters into this kind of like near future kind of dystopian society where this is part of the food production cycle, but you start to see they kind of pitch it as this like delightful thing where this little girl raises the best super pig that's the most friendly and the largest or whatever. And then at the end of the day, you start to see the behind the curtain stuff, how this all enters into this like factory farming meat market that's all incredibly dark. It's a really, really cool film if you haven't seen it.
I have not, but I will.
Oh, yeah, it should. And he's right about it going dark.
Do
be warned. Yeah.
Sweet.
So yeah, while we're here in this hypothetical farm, right? Let's look at the hormones, the growth hormones that I think we were mentioning here. These synthetic growth hormones like RBGH, RBST were approved for use in cows by the FDA way back in 1993. This did not fly in other countries, and at the risk of sounding dismissive, we must ask, where's the beef? I know these are all going to be clunkers today.
Well, the issue here is that not only do these cows, the ones that are injected with these hormones, suffer from significant health problems, some of which then get treated by, guess what, administering those antibiotics to the cows that then get sick. There are also birth defects that these cattle have to deal with due to the hormones, and the products for human consumption that include RBGH and RBST, they do not need to be labeled as being used. Now, a lot of companies will say on their packaging, you know, these are hormone-free or antibiotic-free or something like that. If you'll find milk or sometimes cheeses, all that kind of stuff, those products, you'll find that. But if it doesn't say it, you kind of just have to hope that it's not being used.
Mm-hmm. And there's a bit of a – I don't want to say a rant, but I have a position on this, which is entirely my opinion. We know for a long time that people have been worried about possible dangers from consuming things that had genetically modified organisms in them, or GMOs, right? And there are similar concerns about consuming something that – consuming meat from an animal that was given these growth hormones. And on the other side, there would be people who consider themselves skeptical of any dangers there. And they would say stuff like, well, quite a few of the agricultural products that we know and love today are, if you go back far enough, genetically modified organisms. Corn didn't start as corn. People made it into corn by breeding it. And then they would say, you know, also, if there's no hard proof that a growth hormone will injure you if you eat it, then why do we need to label it? But I feel like that's unnecessarily – I don't know. I feel like that's getting at the wrong part of the argument, because if it's not harmful, the opposite is true, then why have a law against labeling it as such?
But don't you think that those foods that don't expressly say these were not used almost definitely have these hormones in them?
It feels like that would be the assumption now, right?
Because it's like a premium. You're paying a premium for products that don't have these things because these are things that up your yield and allow you to get more bang for your buck. So logic would dictate that the ones that cost a little more can't yield quite as much. So they have to like charge a little bit more because they're not using these things that up their yield. Mm-hmm. So I would, you know, I just think if it doesn't say it, then it probably hasn't.
We need to call Kai Rizdahl and get marketplace on this.
Kai.
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should call him. He keeps a very different schedule from our own.
Very true.
Now forget about Kai. Let's call Ira. Ira will get to the bottom of this.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, he might just tell us to do it for a segment.
That's true. Yeah.
Which I am totally fine with if you are listening, sir. The European Commission banned hormones in livestock in 1981 due to some of these concerns. And Noel, I think that's a really good point. I think it's a fair assumption to say that if it doesn't specifically bill itself as organic, hormone-free, et cetera, free, then you should just assume that it does have something in there, right?
Well, it's like if I buy a product and it's made of plastic and it costs $8, I'm not going to be surprised if it breaks in 2 days. So if I want to buy a really nice coffee machine, say, for example, and you get it and it's like made of machined steel and it's going to cost couple hundred bucks probably, but if I get one that's like $10, I shouldn't be surprised that it's a piece of crap because I paid $10 for it. It's the same with meat. If I'm like getting a steak that costs $2, it's probably a crap steak.
I mean, unless you know the guy.
Yeah, maybe it's a deal, man.
Speaking of knowing the guy, though, when I used to live in Athens, Georgia, there's farmers markets all over the place, and you could go buy beef straight from local farmers. So I mean, I know that seems obvious, but if you have access to that, that's the way to go because it's not – it's a little pricey, but it's not that much more expensive and you know where it's coming from.
Well, it's also – yeah, it is a question of affordability too because when we hear about the benefits of healthy living, especially where diet is concerned, one thing that we often run into will be the – inarguable fact that some people cannot afford to, you know, could not afford the premium at a farmer's market or whatever. And you know, vegetarians and vegans in the audience will make a very good point, which is that you can live with a reasonable budget you can cut out meat, live in a reasonable budget, and eat fresh food all the time. It just takes preparation. And I think that's something that stops a lot of people. The United States is not a very preparation-oriented society when it comes to food.
It also takes mental fortitude, just got to say, to make a big change like that.
And one last thing, I don't want to get on a soapbox. In Georgia, at least, at a lot of farmers markets, there's a program that will give you double your SNAP program.
EBT.
Yeah. EBT. It will give you double the value for spending those tokens. You convert them to tokens at a kiosk, and you get double the value of those that you would get at the grocery store for going to the farmers market. So that
– whoa, that's incredible.
That's a thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And check to see if your state or community has something like that, if this is a concern to you. While you're checking this out, also check the back of labels for cereal or bread products you buy because it might contain something called azodicarbonamide or ADA.
Azodicarbonamide. This is also known as the yoga mat chemical. Yeah, you're going to find this in commercially based bread and in yoga mats. Makes sense, right?
But Matt, yoga mats aren't a food.
Well, they can be. Just add butter, not margarine, butter. Don't eat your yoga mats.
I want to point out that if you practiced yoga, technically you would be a yoga mat.
Oh, wow.
I am really not proud.
Thanks,
I am really swinging and missing on these on these jokes today.
I thought that was over the fence, my friend.
Yeah, that felt good, actually. Guys.
Yeah, thank you. So what does this do, Matt?
Well, it's an additive that was a whitening agent. It was also a dough conditioner. And it's something that the FDA considers safe for food uses, including cereal flour and bread dough. Now, here's the deal. Does bread need this chemical to taste good? Nope. Not at all.
So this is more for a textural quality or for an appearance or cosmetic quality?
Yeah, it's a textural experience,
I would say. Just to make your bread more bread-like.
The striations when it's what do they call it? After it's sat for a while, proven, after the dough has proved. And then when you bake it, then I'm assuming this chemical gives you that just the striations that are nice.
Without actually having to do the work.
Yeah.
And this is banned in Europe, right?
Oh, yeah. Totally banned in Europe, but it's found in almost 500 common American grocery store and chain restaurant foods. And that's, of course, despite the World Health Organization linking this chemical to potential, you know, diseases. It's a carcinogen, they call it, and it could lead to cancer, to several other things.
But despite being legal, a lot of big fast food chains have taken notice and action as well, right?
Right. Subway phased out the ingredient in 2014 because the public found out. It caught on and the public was saying, what's all this ADA in the sandwich bread?
That was when I first heard about yoga mat bread, was because of the Subway kerfuffle.
Yep. Yeah, and then Subway had a couple other kerfuffles right after that.
We're not going to talk about those. That's a different topic.
Different episode, yeah. And also chains like Wendy's and McDonald's took steps to remove ADA from their supply. And as we record today, despite the controversy, as Noel pointed out, it remains legal in the United States. So you may have eaten it today. You may be eating it currently. But what's another example, which I think I safely say is, if not Matt and Noel's, one of my favorite examples. We'll get to it after a word from our sponsor. Here it is. This part of the show is going to be a little bit juvenile. We're talking about potato chips or
potato chips.
Hole in one, my friend. Yes, diarrhea chips.
Very brown hole in one.
It's all thanks to something that was named one of the 50 worst inventions by Time magazine and approved by the FDA. It's a substance called Olestra, a calorie-free, fat-free, cholesterol-free chemical that removes the need for cooking oil and all the fatty, umami goodness it brings with it, but still has a flavor similar to foods like chips and fries.
Yeah, you'll find Olestra in diet versions of all kinds of food products, including chips, frozen yogurts, and plenty others. And if it sounds too good to be true, that's because it most definitely, certainly, oh my God, is.
They ought to call it Irono-Lestra because it makes you more hungry. It's supposed to like be a diet thing, but it actually makes you more hungry.
Well, yeah, I would say it is because it seems deliberately contrary to what was expected. Right? It's like buying a seatbelt that kills you.
It's like the O. Henry of foods.
There we go. It's like the Shyamalan of snacks.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like rain on your wedding day. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. There we go. We got there. I feel like we got to reference. Yes. Olestra, Iran Olestra. Why? What's the hubbub with this stuff?
Well, in addition to actually being a appetite increaser, it has been linked to gastrointestinal disease in children and terrible, awful, horrible, no good, very bad bouts of diarrhea in grown adults.
Yeah. And if you feel the need to personally investigate this, just go find some chips. I'm sure you can find some with that ingredient because it is still legal in the United States. And give yourself a few hours off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go home first.
It's research.
It's research.
you'll probably see it listed as Olean, which is like the brand name. You might even see Olestra somewhere. Probably in American foods, you'll find Olean.
You will not find it in Canada or Europe, however, because that's where it is banned. What else you might be thinking? What else at this time? What other terrifying things did I have on my plate when I sat down and said, I'm going to listen to this podcast while I have a nosh? One of them could be arsenic.
Yeah, straight up poison.
Like old lace, arsenic and old lace.
Yeah.
Like that stuff. It's so famous in mystery novels of yesteryear. It's still allowed in small levels in chicken feed. here in the U.S., not in the European Union.
It's actually such an effective poison in those days of yesteryear because they didn't actually have a test for it, and that didn't come until much later.
Yeah, and here's the thing when you have arsenic in chicken feed. It gets in those chickens. Ah, pesky thing about chicken feed. Gets into the chickens, and then the chickens somehow get into you, and then, oh, there's arsenic in you. That's not good.
And the FDA, for their part, stresses that the amount of arsenic involved is too tiny to be dangerous to people who eat chicken. A lot of this has been exaggerated on the internet. It's not as if someone just tried to kill a bunch of chickens, found out they loved arsenic, and said, hey, we've got a good thing going.
Yeah.
It goes back to a substance called Roxersone, which is made by Pfizer. And they announced that they would discontinue the sale of the additive. But at the time, this was still a very controversial thing. In 2011, the FDA announced that Pfizer, through its subsidiary, Alpharma, voluntarily suspended the sale of this stuff, which was also called 3-nitro, because of an FDA study that detected inorganic arsenic at higher levels, specifically in the livers of chickens.
Did you say 3-nitro?
3-nitro.
That sounds like some sort of like fruity malt beverage, like 4-loco.
I feel like it sounds like a great nickname for someone. I'm really into nicknames now that have specific numbers.
I really like 3-nitro.
Well, maybe that could be maybe we should – do you think Paul would let us call him 3-nitro?
Paul 3-nitro Deccant?
Yeah, super producer Paul 3-nitro.
3-dog nitro.
There we go.
Oh, dig it.
And then the list of these additives, it goes on and on and on. There are going to be several that we don't have time to mention today. One example would be that shiny coating on apples. Short name is DPA. That is also banned in other countries but available here in the U.S.
And make sure you wash your apples.
Make sure you wash your apples.
They're not naturally shiny like that? Like when the teacher shines it up on their pant?
That person was wearing DPA.
Oh, my God.
Jeez. Not even, it looked like, I know it looked like fabric.
They were DP ants.
They were. Oh, as we search for a DP answer to the controversy surrounding the FDA, what we learn is that these are just some of the common contaminants or additives, if you prefer, that you might have eaten recently. And this leads people to larger concerns, not just folks we would describe as health nuts, but you know, people who are just, you know, see themselves as reasonable, right? They might splurge on a huge steak now and then, but usually they're like 3 square meals a day, a couple of snacks, right? Mm-hmm. Even people who don't consider themselves health nuts often believe that the FDA may be too closely related to the industries it is meant to oversee.
No.
Say it ain't so.
You know, you can say it as many times as you want to on a podcast like this. There is a revolving door between private industry and government regulators, and it just – I don't know how you close it because it revolves. You can't close it, and it's just going to exist.
Before 1992, the FDA was, as you would expect, fully regulated and mainly funded by the U.S. government. However, in 1992, Congress passed the Prescription Drug User Fee Act.
Or PDUFA.
I knew you'd like that one. Making the pharmaceutical industry much less like a force or a sphere of business to be overseen and much more like a client for whom the FDA was performing a service.
Anyone who's ever worked as a freelancer knows what you do to a client. You work tirelessly to make them happy so that they'll pay you.
And critics of this situation, this post-1992 situation, say that now the FDA is screwing up left and right. And their general gist of their argument is that the FDA should be considering the public, the U.S. public, and the health of the U.S. public as its primary client, not the industries. And to be completely clear, this enters the realm of the drug industry and the FDA. There's more money involved there. We also know that the FDA has been pursuing special relationships with media outlets. In 2016, there was an article in Scientific American where an author named Charles Seif pointed out that the FDA was doing this move where they would offer to give some media outlets early scoops on a story, with the condition being that the FDA got to choose who these journalists talk to about it afterwards. So like if Matt is doing a story for what news outlet do you work for, Matt?
PRI.
Okay, so PRI. Matt works for PRI and he goes to the FDA, who will be played by Noel. We've worked on this role.
Mm-hmm. Here I am.
And Noel, being the FDA, gives Matt, being PRI, the scoop. And then Matt attempts to go to someone who disagrees with the FDA. And that could be either Paul or me, depending on how we want to do the casting. And then fundamentally violates a legal precept. PRI's huge trouble. Matt might get fired. And PRI would get blacklisted from these other reports until they became public knowledge.
You guys, I'm having a kind of a Kaiser Soze moment here. FDA, PRI, three letters. Are they the same thing?
It's a foodapri.
ABC, NBC, HSW.
Whoa.
No one is safe.
No one is safe. Whoa. And wait, all of our initials are three letters.
Oh, Kaiser Soze.
But what about STDWYTK?
We're the lone outlier.
The lone outlier. The name sounded unwieldy, but finally, several years in, you know why we chose that approach. So additionally, you know, you can see reports where scientists during the Barack Obama presidential administration were begging the government to prevent managers at the FDA and other industry insiders from forcing them to spin data or suppress results. So in conclusion, yes, there is a chance that you are eating things that the rest of the world considers dangerous, unhealthy, and possibly, in some extreme cases, terrifying. It also seems that whether you ascribe to one particular conspiracy or another, something fishy seems to be happening at the FDA, and more people are asking, is the FDA looking out for you or is it looking out for an industry?
Yeah, the cynics, I would say probably myself included, are really starting to view the FDA and a lot of other regulatory groups and administrations within the United States government as just a part of the game that you have to play if you want to be a part of an industry, whether it's food or drugs or arms or, you know, whatever name your industry and your regulatory body. They seem to be more of gatekeepers than anything else.
Agreed.
Oh, and Ben, last thing, just knowing that Europe – most of Europe and a lot of other countries say no to most of the things that we listed out today. It really does make you worry.
Well, when I went to Europe for the first time, the thing that surprised me was that they have breasts in their advertising.
Mm-hmm.
Here, that's where we draw the line. But yoga mat chemicals in our bread? A-OK, buddy.
That's a good point.
It's true.
But no nipples.
No. Nipples are still a hard no in the United States. Poor choice of words.
That was good.
So we hope that you enjoyed this episode. We're only scratching the surface and pointing out the contrast between what one government considers fine and dandy and another government considers dangerous and troubling. However, this does not end our show. It's time for a very special
Shout Out Corners.
Okay, guys, you know how on Shout Out Corner we usually do a couple of emails, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay, well, I found something that's a little different. I hope you like it. This is going to be a surprise for all four of us, and I've been hiding it behind my back the entire time we've been recording. We got a package.
Whoa!
So this comes to us from Nathan S., and You taped it up really well, Nathan.
It's about the size of a CD container.
Yeah, do you want to describe it?
Compact disc container, but it is, it's got that packing tape all over it. I am seeing what appears to be a disc, maybe, or hold on.
Oh my gosh,
do you think it's full of government secrets?
I don't know. Let's pull one of these out.
Earlier when I said there was a surprise, Noel, you had asked me if it was like a poisonous chemical additive. I said, I don't know. What is it, Matt?
I'm going to pass this around. It appears to be a disc. I think it is. I can't open it right now. But it's titled Missouri Loves Company Presents Le Concert Infernal EP.
It appears to be some sort of heavy metal record. Not the kinds of things that would poison your food, but the rock variety. We've got a track list. It's Le Concert Infernal EP, Scandal in Wait, Misery Loves Company, Borderline Obsessives, Hounds and Shepherds, and Mayday. So we're going to, you know, I don't know if I have a way to play this.
We have three copies, though.
I'm streaming in vinyl only today, these days, guys.
I can listen to this in my car on the way home. That's what I'm going to do.
All right. Well, you report back on the next episode, yeah?
Absolutely.
So this was a surprise out of the blue for us, and we're going to check it out. I think I also am going to listen to this in the car. I need some good road music. I'm driving around doing some completely non-shady things after this.
Oh, I could play it on my PS4, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, hey, we have a note, you guys.
Oh, please. Yes, Rita, we're supposed to – I was hoping for a note.
Nathan says – Ben, Matt, Noel, hey guys, I just wanted to say that I'm a big fan of the show. It keeps my skeptic side nice and aware that things aren't always as they appear. I've sent a few of my band's EPs to say thanks. I know Noel is a musician and Ben and Matt have some good taste, so I hope you dudes enjoy. By the way, I'm a musician too.
Yeah, come on, Matt's Nathan. A great percussionist.
Not really. I'm a drummer.
I have horrible taste.
Yeah. I'm like, whatever.
Get it right, dude.
You guys are punchy today.
Nathan says, it's just a little DIY CD, but it's the least I could do for the hours of free entertainment you guys have given me. We should have an LP done this year, so if you like the tunes, we can send that when it's all done too. Keep up the good work and keep shining a light on the stuff they don't want you to know.
Well, maybe we can. You know what we should do? We should rip one of these tracks and play it out. Play the episode out on one, like a little sample of his music. What do you think?
Yeah? I think that's a fantastic idea. Thank you so much, Nathan S. This concludes our But Not Our Show. We will be back very soon with another episode of Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. We hope that you enjoyed this one, and we hope that you will drop by your platform of choice, toss us a review if you would like. You can also find us at other places on the internet.
And we do the social meds to take a page out of the Chuck Bryant book. We are Conspiracy Stuff at Facebook and Twitter, and Instagram we are Conspiracy Stuff Show.
And we have a brand new Facebook group called Here's Where It Gets Crazy. You can join us there if you haven't already. You can join discussions about each episode. You can send all kinds of cool messages that we'll get to see and discuss things with your friends and family, basically, like us, who listen to the show.
And we're also actually on this page and active. So do check it out if you want to find out where it gets crazy. There's one more thing, though, for everybody who despises or loathes the social hullabaloo that is the, what was that, Sochmeads?
The Sochmeads.
You can write to us directly. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
And without further ado, friends and neighbors, Missouri loves company.